This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehaya Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
There is not enough food, but also there is no money, because even if there is some food, but people doesn't have money to get access to food. And now children in some families are being affected by this situation since hospitals are receiving cases of children with malnutrition.
That was reporter Sabiti Jafar Al-Kitanti updating us on the situation in Goma since M23 rebels captured it in January. Details coming up also. The Trump administration is considering downsizing U.S.-Africa command. And we hear the struggle many Sudanese women encounter on their journeys to safety. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Since M23 rebels captured the city of Goma in the eastern DRC at the end of January, they have been in complete control. How is life in Goma these days? There are reports of young men being shot in the streets. For more details, I reached out to reporter Sabiti Jafar Al-Kitanti in Goma, who first tells me about banks still not operating and malnutrition slowly creeping.
The financial situation is still the same, as banks have never opened their doors since the takeover of the city, and people in Goma are in the lack of cash.
How do people go about buying their daily groceries, daily needs without any money? How does that work over there?
That's the biggest problem, the biggest dilemma of people in Goma. First of all, we don't have enough food. So there is no money in the city. Now all Goma people are poor. Because even if you have a lot of money in your account, you can't reach them. I will add that this is my first time to hear in Goma cases of malnutrition. A hospital in Goma are receiving cases of kids with malnutrition here in Goma. And these kids are from locals of Goma, not from ADPs.
Basically, there is no food and children are being affected with malnutrition.
Exactly. There is not enough food, but also there is no money, because even if there is some food, but people doesn't have money to get access to food. And now children in some families are being affected by this situation since hospitals are receiving cases of children with malnutrition.
And another thing, Jafar, it's a BBC report that is saying young people, young men, are being killed on the streets of Goma. So what is going on as far as M23 armed groups actually operating and shooting to kill in broad daylight in Goma?
Yes, there are like 2 weeks people in some neighborhoods close to the Katindo camp alerted on the killing of young people. Those neighborhoods which are close to the camp were attacked one day or 2 days by M23, who was considering all young men in that neighborhood, according to what people reported, according to what families reported. M23 soldiers were considering all young people in those neighborhoods to be Wazalendo or FRDC. So in their mission of cleaning the city, many young people with dreadlocks or without IDs or just someone looking dirty were killed.
So Jafar, you're talking about malnutrition and now killings on the streets, no money in from the banks. Life is getting a little more strenuous for people over there.
People doesn't have any other choice. They are trying to live with. because there is not any other choice. And the situation is like this, except if by talking between the government and the M23 ARC, something will change.
2 days ago, Angola has agreed to mediate between M23 and the Kinshasa government. Is there hope? Are people happy that something is being done as far as peace talks going on?
Yes, people are divided. Some people are happy, especially those under the M23 control. They have already understand that military response will not end this situation. But Congolese under the government control, they are not happy because they want that the government of DRC make end of the M23 inversion, what is called also Rwandan inversion. Kinshasa always claim to accept to talk, but not with M23, but with Rwanda. And according to what the Angolan president said, seems that for this time, the DRC government will change his proposal and accept to meet face-to-face M23 leaders.
Reporter Sabiti Jafar Al-Katanti talking to me from Goma. President Donald Trump's administration is considering downsizing U.S. Africa Command, known as AFRICOM, as part of its broader effort to reduce the size of the Pentagon. The move involves making AFRICOM a sub-command of the European Command. Supporters contend that moving AFRICOM into the European force would simplify command structures and cut down on bureaucracy. However, opponents argued that this could diminish U.S. military influence in Africa, creating a space that could be filled by Russia and China. David DeRoche, associate professor at the National Defense University, discussed the merits of this idea with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi.
I think there is something to be said there. Africa Command has never really reached its full potential. The theory behind the establishment of Africa Command was that Africa had been neglected previously when it was part of European Command, and that by having a standalone command, they would able to have a continual engagement. The problem is there was no plus up in the personnel assigned to Africa Command, and there really isn't the demand for persistence presence in Africa that we had anticipated. So what you wound up seeing was that most of the subcomponents, like the Air Command, they just folded it in the European Command. The Naval Command folded it in the European Command. And you wound up, instead of getting a really strong interagency presence at Africa Command, it never quite fit in. So you didn't get the best and the brightest from other agencies that the Department of Defense had hoped for. And it was always a little submanned, undermanned. I think that you can make the case that if you keep maybe a 4-star billet dedicated to Africa and maybe 30-man cell at European Command dedicated solely to African affairs, you could probably have an engagement with Africa on a similar level without having an entire headquarters and the overhead that comes with it.
But opponents argue that this would diminish U.S. military influence in Africa, creating a space that could be filled by Russia and China.
Well, it might have been valid a few years ago, but what we've seen is while Africa Command has been established and presumably in full force, the United States has been replaced by Russia and Burkina Faso, but the West and the United States in Niger, in Mali, and the French have been pretty much ejected from Chad. These are all countries that were key to our Sahel capability. The presence of the U.S. in Africa is usually limited to African Lion. That's a series of exercises that predated the establishment of Africa Command. So it's kind of hard to, you know, the bad things are happening with Africa Command, and some of the good things happened without Africa Command. So it's hard to make the case that Africa Command is as important as advocates argue. That being said, Africa still remains important. The question is whether you can achieve our desired effect without having a dedicated 4-star command. And I think I'm sympathetic to the idea that you can't.
But following the U.S. withdrawal of its forces in Africa, then France on Friday began handing over military bases in Senegal as part of a withdrawal of troops from the West African nation, where it has had a presence since 1990. 1960. And this withdrawal follows the departure of French forces from Mali, Burkina Faso, Niger, Chad, and Ivory Coast in recent years. How would that impact the counterterrorism efforts in Africa?
The counterterrorism efforts in Africa are not satisfactory by any means. I mean, it has been steadily declining. And what we've seen is that countries that had been partners, as you noted, are ejecting France, which was the key player in the Sahel in the United States, which was a key supporting player. So it's going to be impacted, but it's already on a downward trajectory with Africa Command. So the question is, what would the expense of a dedicated four-star headquarters, which has to have an inspector general or a staff judge advocate and, you know, an entire staff, what would that command, given that it couldn't stop the trajectory, couldn't we do it just by having a sub-command that doesn't require all the overhead, but could conduct continual engagement? How much of a drop-off would there be? And I would argue that the drop-off will not be that much, that you could maintain the same level of performance, but with less overhead.
That was David Darroch, associate professor at the National Defense University in Washington, talking to Mohamed El-Shenawi. Many women fleeing the conflict in Sudan encounter difficulties on their journey to safety across the country. 25-year-old Habila Elder Malit, who escaped from Khartoum with her mother and three siblings, made it to Port Sudan. She says men in uniform took away their valuables, including gold and money. Malit tells VOA's John Tanza her journey from Khartoum to Port Sudan was tough.
We came by bus from the place that we stay in to a place called Souk Sitta. There was buses there, and we took the bus to go to Al-Duwam in the White Nile. In the road, we caused of hard things. We saw
hard some hard things happened to you on the road. Yeah. Tell me what happened to you exactly.
First thing, Dam Syria. He was like stable in that place. When the bus was going to the White Nile, they stopped us, and then they was checking on our bags. They took money and they took gold. They took anything expensive.
They took anything that is expensive.
Yeah, they took anything expensive.
How did you know that these are rapid support forces?
We don't know. They was wearing their uniforms, so that means they are from them. After they take anything, there was a very beautiful girl in the bus. It was only with her mom. We was like 28 women and girls. There was no men except the driver. So they took that girl from her mom. Her mom was shouting and she cried, but they took the girl. And then they say to the driver, go. And if you didn't go, we will kill you and we will kill them all. So the driver, he drive and he took us to the White Nile. And we staying there, and her mom comes back. We don't know what happened after that.
And sorry about that experience. I know it's very hard to see a lady being taken away from amongst
her
you.
Family.
Yeah, from her family. How did that experience affect you?
It was hard for me. Like, if until now, sometimes I think, what if I was in her place? What if I didn't see my family again? If they took me from my mom, what's gonna happen for me and what's happened for her? Right now, it's like 1 year and 8 months. I don't know if her mom found her or no until now.
My understanding is you are a dual nationality, Sudanese and South Sudanese. Your father is from South Sudan. And your mother is here, but you were born here, grew up here. Yeah, someone would think the first place you would think of escaping to is South Sudan. Why did you not go to South Sudan and opted to come to Port Sudan?
How am I going to go to South Sudan? The road, the money, the expensive buses to there. So it cost a lot. Specifically that we are four. If it was only me, maybe I will think to go there, but we are four. We don't can handle the cost.
How do you feel being here in Port Sudan. How do you feel?
I thank God just because the place is safe. We just looking for a place safe. So, alhamdulillah.
This camp, I'm seeing only women and children. Why is that so?
There's no men here because the men stayed in their homes to save it or something. And in our place, them say they didn't give the men chance to go out.
They did not give the chance for men to leave the house.
To leave the house, to leave the place. Like, they can leave the house to the market and go back, but they don't can travel out of the place.
That was Hibala Eldin Banlith, who fled to Port Sudan from Khartoum to avoid fighting between the Sudan Armed Forces and the rival Rapid Support Forces. She was speaking to VOA's John Tanza, who has been in Sudan over the past several days. There are new concerns about regional violence in Ethiopia after reports that a faction of the Tigray People's Liberation Front has seized two towns in the Tigray region. The TPLF fought a bitter war against the Ethiopian federal government from 2020 to 2022. Hostilities ended with an agreement signed in late 2022. United Nations spokesman Stefan Dujarric yesterday commented on the situation to journalists at the UN headquarters in New York.
And I've also been asked about the situation in Tigray, in Ethiopia, and I can tell you that we are monitoring closely the developments in Tigray. We urge all parties to de-escalate the tensions, refrain from violence, and engage in urgent dialogue. We emphasize the importance of implementing the provisions of the cessation of hostilities agreement to achieve a sustainable peace in Ethiopia.
That was United Nations spokesman Stefan Dujarric speaking to journalists yesterday in New York. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Tropical cyclone Jude slammed into parts of southern Africa this week, causing no deaths but widespread damage, especially in Malawi and Mozambique. Officials in the two countries say thousands of people have been left homeless and some areas are without power. Aid agencies are distributing relief where they can, but washed-away roads are making the task difficult. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre, Malawi.
Tropical cyclone Jude made landfall in northern Mozambique early Sunday and later moved over southern Malawi, resulting in heavy rains affecting 13 districts from Monday to Wednesday. A preliminary impact assessment from Malawi's Department of Disaster Management Affairs released Thursday shows that the cyclone has so far affected more than 11,000 people. This means their crops were washed away and their houses and property were either destroyed or submerged by floods. It says the cyclone also displaced more than 3,000 people, now sheltered in 6 evacuation camps. No deaths have been recorded, but the Disaster Management Department says 15 people have sustained injuries from collapsing buildings, with some hospitalized. Chibiriro Kamula is the department's spokesperson.
Reports indicate that 5 under 8-year-old males have sustained serious injuries. The 5-year-old is receiving medical attention at Queen Elizabeth Central Hospital, and the 8-year-old has been admitted as well and is at Mwanza District Hospital. This has been caused by collapsing of the walls.
He says the National Search and Rescue Team is still looking for 3 people who went missing on Tuesday in Insanja and Palombe districts after their boat capsized on a flooded river. A UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says that in Mozambique, relief operations have been severely hampered by lack of access to thousands of people in Nampula province, where many roads, bridges, and culverts were washed away. The UN agency says moving relief items and personnel from Cabo Delgado province to Nampula is also difficult because the storm cut off the N1 national highway. However, in Malawi, international aid agencies and the government have started relief operations in accessible areas. For example, the World Food Program on Thursday distributed some relief items to affected people in Mulanje district. Simon Den here is the acting country director for the WFP in Malawi.
With support from the UK government, WFP and the Department of Disaster Management Affairs have pre-positioned food supplies, emergency kits, and operational equipment, including search and rescue boats to enable rapid response.
Lucen Tilatila is the director of Department of Climate Change and Meteorological Services in Malawi. She told VOA Thursday that Cyclone Judy has now moved away from Malawi to Mozambique, where it is expected to dissipate.
Right now, the threat of this cyclone is almost over. Of course, maybe in an area where there were already heavy rains, those can still trigger some floods, but still, I think the impact that could come with these rains that we're getting right now would be very minimal.
Judy is the third cyclone to affect Mozambique in the past 3 months, following cyclones Chido in December 2024 and Dikeledi in January. Malawi avoided the heat from Dikeledi, but was struck by Chido in December. Lamek Masina, VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiya Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Douglas Mpuga, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information. Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.